The word pain stands for pay attention inside now. You know, I started to like really dig deeper into like, what is a friend for real? When people have spark in their eyes, go for that. And I really feel I became like a phoenix bird from the ashes. It was so hard, but out of it, it became so much light and so much flow. And I know I would not sit here and do all the stuff I did if I didn't go through the pain. Fly, my dear eagles, fly.
Yo! What's up, everybody? I am out here on a morning run in the hills of Topanga, California, and I just wanted to take this moment to express my gratitude for you guys. We are about 10 days away from launch, which is on December 3rd, the launch of this book, Talk to Strangers, that I've worked on for 3 years. And as of now, we are almost at 10,000 pre-orders on the book, which is completely insane. That's so many people. So I just wanted to say, if you're one of those people and you've pre-ordered the book, I can't thank you enough. Seriously, your support means truly, truly, truly the world. And for those of you, even if you haven't bought in the book, if you've watched these videos, listened to these podcasts, read the newsletters, given us a like, even just taking the time to consume any kind of content that we put out, it truly is
how stuff on got to work.
And now, him and I had this conversation. I just wanted to start with that. And now, him and I had this conversation to one of my favorite humans. His name is Staffan Taylor. You most likely know him. He is one of the co-hosts of Yes Theory, now a full-time member after coming in this year, and we're so freaking excited to have him on board. Him and I had this conversation a few months ago in Paris when we were there together, and it was such a blast to talk about how Staffan got to where he is and all the lessons he's learned along the way. There's so much freaking wisdom in this podcast. I know you'll get a ton out of it. I know you'll love it. And yeah, I hope you enjoy it. Sending my love. December 3rd. Let's go. Morning run. Get ready. Big day's coming. Boom.
When I was thinking about how to start this conversation, I kind of want to go to that day, the moment that you joined this world or even found out about this world. Because there was, I mean, I've seen the video and I've seen, you know, the behind the scenes of the video, but up until I think 3 weeks ago, I didn't know all the little coincidences that happened that led you to see Thomas that day in Stockholm.
Yeah.
So I'd love to kind of even just briefly just walk us through what was happening that day, how you ended up on that street. And then, yeah, the whole, how it all unfolded from your perspective. I think that'd be cool.
Let's dig. First thing that comes to my mind is that when I met Thomas and Tommy, I told them I'm a professional dreamer and they just love that. But a background to that is that I've been telling myself that I was a professional dreamer since I had literally nothing. And I'm not want to present myself in a way like, oh, he was hustling and dustling in Sweden on the streets. But literally when I started my path of exploring that there is more in life than we can, than we are given, that we can actually create something more just by having a dream or by having a hope. So I was communicating that. Some people in Sweden made fun of that a couple of times. And also one person said one time, get a job. And it's so ironically right that a couple of years later, it can just exist on the street. So I'm still processing that day 4 years ago of meeting someone who can open up the entire inner world, which Yes Theory did. So forever grateful. That same morning, I was at like a business conference. I've been doing public speaking in Sweden for many years. I've been working with high school students, been running an NGO, been helping out like the next generation to pretty much to say yes, seek discomfort and spread love over fear, but in our words as we did it. But I've been doing like summer camps for around 1,000 high schools every summer. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 1,000 high school students every summer together with my friends. And then public speaking for, yeah, quite some years. And that same morning, I was at a business conference being interviewed. And the first question this person asked me was, how does it come that you're so young and it's been going so good for you? And I was like, damn, that's a tough first question to start with when I had these people in front of me. And I said, I believe in putting my heart first and walking after, and to be open for people and opportunities that come along your way. I said this the same morning.
Wow. Oh my God.
And my friend Åsa, she was there this morning as well, like as my witness to like be there and when the business meeting, whatever was done, everyone was going to share their takeaway. And people said nice things. Then it was this man who said, like, I didn't understand any of the messages today, he said. And he looked at me. And I was like, damn, that hurt.
That was his question. I didn't understand any of this. Thanks.
Exactly. Exactly like that. Yeah. So that was my morning. And then I walked home. I am a Google Maps lover. Shout out to Google Maps. Not sponsored. And Google Maps told me to go through straight, but call it whatever. It could have been something, intuition, slump, chance. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But something in me said, go to the right on a street I was not supposed to go to. And 300 meters later, I meet Tommy and Thomas. And they asked me to to swap life. And I said, I'm a professional dreamer.
It's honestly, it's even just thinking about that interaction on camera. I think the first time I saw it, you smile instantly. That rarely happens when we ask strangers stuff. It's like just the instant love of what they're asking for. I think there's like, I could almost like see something in you being like, oh wow, like these guys, they get it, you know, or like, they're like me.
Yeah.
You know?
100%. Yeah. Like even in the video, I said like, oh, it was his smile. And I'm referring to Tommy was smiling. He was holding the camera and smiling so much. And then I was looking at Thomas and he was like, do you want to swap life and go to America? And I was like, who are these people? Like I refer to it sometimes like I could see the spark in their eyes.
Mm.
So it was like so much spark in their eyes. And I tend to, I don't know if I'm just free flowing on in a deep end here, but like,
you're good, dude. For free.
Thanks, bro. I love to see life as a map instead of a. I love to see that we live life in our compass instead of our map.
Mm.
Because like, if you have a map over New York, but you are in Los Angeles, it will be impossible to navigate yourself. Or if you are in Tanzania and you have a map over Stockholm, Sweden, it will be impossible. But if you have a compass filled with like your values, your morals, your ethics that you want to live your life by, then it will be easier to navigate. And an interesting thing is that the weekend I met Thomas and Tommy, it was my most busy weekend in a long, long, long time. I had this big thing coming up in Sweden next week. I had canceled, I don't know why I'm sharing this, I had canceled a date Friday night because I just wanted to work the full weekend.
Mm.
So I was like super busy. And then suddenly these two people came up and say, hi, swap life. So connect that to the compass. It was that in the compass, I've been connecting it to when people have spark in their eyes, go for that. When you see someone shining, or when people make you feel like a sun, when they feel, then go to these people.
Mm.
And they had both. They made me so feel so seen. They were sending so much love and they had spark in their eyes.
Wow. Is that something you'd established a long time before? Where you're like, anytime I meet this kind of person that makes me feel this way,
yeah,
I'm going to go towards it?
Yeah. I've been living like that for quite many years. Yeah. And before that as well, to live in my compass. Because I think we are too small to decide what life is going to give to us. I could never in my wildest fantasy dream and expect that someone would come with a question like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I always try to be humble. I don't always succeed, but I try to be humble that life is so much bigger than me and I can't control it.
Mm.
And I just have to let go and see what life has in store for me. And that helps me by being in the compass, then I can be more open for people and opportunities and things when I can help or when I can get help.
Mm-hmm.
It goes both ways. Sometimes, like one of my strongest values is to include other people. So if I see a moment where someone is not included, it often hits me really hard, and then I want to go into the compass and help out.
Mm.
So it goes both ways to not miss the opportunities in life. To
Where does that come from? Like the, I guess just Stefan. This, it's almost like you're like a symbol of this way of thinking now. Mm. At least in my mind, you know, it's like, I know whenever I go and see you, I'm going to leave feeling better or more positive. Or when we're interacting with anybody, and I see you do it, you know, even when we were with Reg, like you're always looking to make sure the group's intact, you know, and even strangers that come in, you're always like at the meetup 2 days ago, you know, you're always just navigating people and, you know, helping them feel included. So I mean, I know a little bit about this. Like, I know a little bit about you, your struggles with bullying and some of your family struggles, but I feel like this is a cool opportunity to go into some of that, because I feel like this seed of positivity is very often not, I mean, I think we're inherently born with it, but it's oftentimes people who have struggled a lot who do that, you know, who make people feel included, who are extra positive. So where does it come from?
Thank you, bro, for saying that and asking. And I also just want to add as well that I think I never felt as seen as I did when I went to Texas as well. I told you this before as well, but I just want to put some light on it now as well. Like how you made me feel seen and gave me wings when we were in Texas. It was just, said it many times and I'm saying it again. You gave me wings to fly on that journey and just elevated.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks, bro.
It was a special few days.
Yeah, it sure was, yeah.
God.
Yeah. So, where it comes from me is that what I can recall is the memories from being younger and not feeling seen or being excluded, and the hurt and the pain that was left with, and especially when it was not taken care of, maybe. The new coping mechanisms was created maybe to handle certain amount of pain, maybe be someone I didn't want to be or act in a certain way or have like a mask on my face that was not mine. So I think that's where it was created, and the memories is from school of people commenting. I had like acne when I was younger, skin condition, and there's this it's just one memory coming up now of my head of someone saying there's a special bread in Sweden which is very, how we say, rough, whatever. And this guy said, like, it described me as that bread and said, let's enter the classroom. And he was referring like to my skin, and it was so hurtful. And
dude, I had such bad acne too.
Yeah,
same. Brutal.
Yeah, it can be tough.
Yeah,
like in the most times where you maybe as most needed of a community, then you're most vulnerable as well. I don't know. I was just a such easy target for bullying at that time. So
was it because of the acne, or were you like a smaller kid, or what was it?
I think acne was one of them. And I, when it comes to pain, like I would like to revolutionize like the entire school system, like to build self-esteem, because then kid can handle the world and what comes to you so much easier. But I think it's like a different couple of things. Of course, some things maybe are from family, some things from school. When it comes to acne, I started to wear a scarf around my neck.
It was on your neck.
Yeah, to cover really? It. You can see like a scar on my neck here. So that's so when in high school, that was like a big, it looked like, yeah. So I was wearing like a scarf, like for quite a lot of my time during high school. And it was just a battle of hiding instead of showing my own light. So I think it was just building up instead of, it was like building up even more hiding instead of more showing my light. That's why it also hit me so much when we were in Texas, you told me, show your weird lights or the weirdos know where to find you. And I was man. Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, I love weirdos.
Yeah.
My favorite people are the weirdos.
Yeah, bro, here we are.
Yeah. Here we are in Thomas's bedroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Talking about life. So, so that's, I think that's my moment. And then from an early age, when I could see someone was not included, I often tried to include them, and then it just became, my weakness became a gift, I think. Yeah. So I think you're totally right of pointing it out that it's somewhere deeper, and then I can more relate to people that's not included. I remember like one guy in school, he was like a member of some religion or whatever was very not common. I used to start to think about him now, but I always tried to make him feel welcome, because he was already obvious that he was so much different from everyone else. Or if someone was new from another country, like I always tried to include as much as possible. I think that.
Damn, dude. I wish you had been there when I moved. It would have been epic.
Yeah.
I have this such a similar experience moving and leaving with this, like a true understanding of what it's like to not belong.
Yeah.
I think a lot of ways, Yes Theory is built out of that. It's like this feeling of not belonging to, you know, the place or the community or whatever that you exist in. And you know, that's why the Yes Fam, I think, is so powerful.
Yeah,
it's just a lot of people that just feel like they can't fit in anywhere. But yeah, dude, I mean, moving at a very young age,
When did you move?
When I was 7. So you have this like idea of the world. It's very fixed. You understand your place in it. You have your friends, etc. And then it's one of my therapist describes it as like, it's like as a child, you've been taught your whole life to run a marathon, and all of a sudden everybody runs 100 meter sprints and you have no idea how to run a 100 meter sprint. You've never trained for it.
Yeah.
And people are like, why are you trained for a marathon? You know, forever, I think I was just so mad at it, because not belonging just sucks so fucking much, dude. And there is some anger towards people for not understanding you. You're like, why don't you get me? You know? And how do I figure this thing out?
Yeah.
But now the older I get, literally year by year, there's more and more appreciation for it, because you're like, wow, had I never experienced that, I wouldn't treat people necessarily the way I do now, because I wouldn't understand that feeling the way I do. So I think these things that we think are so wrong with us that prevent us from fully integrating into a group, it's actually, those are the, like, that's the seed of growth. That's like the gift, you know? Yeah, dude. And so that's why, I mean, I see it in you so much, you know?
Yeah. I think we all can maybe take a moment to look at like the hard stuff in our life, like, and transform that into a treasure. I read this quote once, like, transform your triggers into a treasure.
Into a treasure?
Yes. Nice. So whatever triggers you, like, transform that into a treasure. And for me, it was definitely not being included. I put like 90% of my energy, maybe, I don't know, to try to always try to fit in. And it just took so much of my headspace. But today it's a gift, same as what you write, a gift of including other people. And so yeah.
When did it switch? Like, when did you stop trying to fit in so much?
I think it was, like a year before we met each other. I think it was a year before we met each other because it was
really?
Like,
recently?
Yeah, that recently, yeah.
Wow.
When I really like, okay, I have to do this myself, because I don't want to put myself in a light of, oh, it was so hard for me to go on the journey, etc. Because everyone has their own hardships. I also learned, but I did struggle a lot in my path of being a professional dreamer. I wanted to spread a lot of love. I was like collecting hearts. Whenever I saw a heart on the ground, I took a photo of that and pictured that. took it on my Instagram. I still do it. Yes. People still send me hearts like, oh, I found hearts here in the macaronis. Look at this. And while I was doing that, like, I was giving a lot of support from people, but it was also a really great place for people to just attack and saying like, look at this dude spreading love. Look at this dude being a professional dreamer. Who do we think he is? And I don't know how many questions. At times I've got like, can you live being a professional dreamer? Is that the work? Like someone said at an older age as well, like, get a job. And I said like, no, someone said like, oh, you're unemployed. And I was like, what do you do for a living? And I was like, I'm a professional dreamer. And she said like, okay, so you're unemployed. Well, I was like, dude, you say that to my face, man. One thing is to say behind my back, but like, but yeah, so anyhow, like, so I was on this path of like doing summer camps, doing public speaking, and I, you know, I was going for it. I had a great life. Like, I was, I don't want to put it in any way that it was not nice, because I really loved my life of inspiring, and I met thousands of high school students and so, but it was still this voice in my head, which was pretty loud still. And the moment which I had to face it was on the Swedish National Day, the year before we met each other, when some people I thought was my friends, to summarize the story, they were just very mean and making a lot of fun of the things I was doing. And,
of your like job choice.
Yeah, of my job choice and everything. And it's like,
to, in front of your face or like behind?
Yeah, in front of my face. One of the guy was pretty drunk one evening and he just said things, and I was like curious to know. So I like kept on digging and I asked him question, and it was just, it broke my heart. Even now when I speak about it,
really?
It's just, it's just, that was, that was heavy, because I needed to like really choose myself, I think, in this, in looking back at it now. And I understand like rationally, like hurt people and so, but it's just that friends don't hurt friends, I was thinking. But friends that are hurt will hurt you as well, mm-hmm. because they are scared, right? And that was the moment, that was the thing that happened, I believe. They were saying really mean things and shared some stories about when they have been gathering and making fun of some clips I put on up on the internet, like, and it was just, yeah, it was just very devastating. But I needed to like really go into myself. And an interesting thing is that the day after this happened, the morning after, I went and saw my friend. She's around 50 years old, and half of her life she'd been blind, and half of her life she'd been seeing. So when she was around 25, she lost her eyesight. And wow. Yeah, and she's just a gift to this earth. And when I saw her and I said, "Hi, Anna." And before, like, you know, before we even hugged, she said, "What has happened?"
Damn.
And I was like, "Anna, how do you know? You can't even see me," I said. And she was like, "Stefan, I can't see you, but I see you."
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, I'm getting chills now when I was saying it. It was a day after this evening happened with these guys. And she said, "So what, tell me what happened?" And I was like, "I was some friends yesterday," and I told her a story, and she was like, "They're not your friends." Wow. And I was like, "Yeah, you're true, Anna. I'd rather sit here with you and just talk about life forever." So then I realized, like, I'd rather have one close friend. I had more friends than Anna, but I decided that less is more. I don't need to be friend of everyone. I don't need to find everyone's acceptance. And the chase I had been doing for so many years, from like pretty much since high school until yeah, that
time. Chase to belong.
Yeah, the chase to belong. Mm-hmm. And I just really needed to face that. And I had like a big transition. I made like an Excel list of all my friends.
For real.
And I was like, it called my best friends. I still have it. And I was like, okay, who are my friends? And I like categorized like in some friends that I grew up with, some friends who is my best friends, some friends who is like, you know, I started to like really dig deeper into like, what is a friend for real? So yeah, that's what I did. And I realized I didn't have so many friends. True friends, real friends.
And what is that? How would you define that? Or how did you define it?
A friend is a person I can show up to and be my full self. Mm-hmm. A friend is a person that find the gifts in me when I don't see them. When I'm by myself, I often find my shortcomings. When I'm with a good friend, we find each other's strengths. Because I know that I'm not always my best friend. Sometimes I am, but life is already hard enough. I'm telling you, it's already hard enough. So I need those friends who can mirror my light. Thomas and Tommy was two of them on the streets of Sweden who used to mirror my light. Mm-hmm. I said, "Do you want to go on an adventure? Do you want to swap life?" Yeah, that could be possible. And they were just sending love and light, and it just made it easy. And then I went on a plane, and then I met you, Matt, and you were sending love and light all the way. And then I was on the way back to Sweden asking myself, what just happened? What just happened is that I met people who was sending so much love and light and was accepting my full self. The things you made me do in Texas, bro. I was just throwing off my shirt.
Honestly,
running
I didn't
around.
Make you do anything. I just let you, you know.
That's what I mean. You held this space and so much love. So I felt like I didn't even think about that. I still don't know what happened. I was just in the flow because you were holding the space so much. And I think that's what's being created right now as well in what we are doing on the mission together now with the STRA of like just being in a good space to allow ourselves to be our full selves so that can mirror for other people to be their full selves. And together we can empower each other because the mission goes so much beyond, right? It's the entire Yes family, everyone who taps into the message, who can spread it further to that person who needs to hear it. So that person can throw his or her scarf and be their full selves.
I love that image, throwing the scarf, taking it off. It's so interesting, dude. We have very similar paths in that way. Because for a long time, for me, you know, this desperation to fit in, you'll accept any kind of love.
Yeah.
There's no like filter for love. You're like, if there's even a small inkling of love, I'll take it. You're like starving for it.
Yeah.
And so you end up with people who don't necessarily appreciate you. And for a lot of my life, you know, I kind of just like played this guy who would like constantly make fun of himself, constantly put himself down, like constantly just try and be less than friends, you know? And it was so odd for me to have friends that I felt super supported by, and it was actually really interesting when we moved into our second apartment in Montreal, like 3-4 months into starting Yes Theory. This is like a very exclusive story. It's like extremely embarrassing, but it was Thomas, Amar, and I living in this apartment together. And I had my one room. They were sharing one room. And one morning I hadn't drank much and I was feeling a little lightheaded. And I went to the bathroom to do number two. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, I'm like passed out over the bathtub and I have like a giant headache and I'm fully naked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? And the door has slammed open. I had locked it, but it slammed open. And Thomas and Amar were above me, like my naked body, like lifting me up. And they're like, dude, what happened? And they like put me on their both sides of me, put their arms over their shoulders and walked me back to my bed, called the ambulance, and I ended up going to the hospital. And I remember calling my mom and being like, I forget exactly what I said, but I was like, it's so surprising to me that they would do that for me. You know, it's like, I can't believe they did that for me.
Mm.
My mom was like, why can't you believe that? Why is that so strange to believe that somebody would show up for you like that? It's like, wow, I never thought about it that way. I guess that is what a friend is supposed to do, you know, show up for you when you're like naked and pretty much just shat yourself, you know, and they're like still holding you up, literally. And so.
And you were not ready to take that love.
Yeah, I don't think I was prepared for it. It felt unusual, you know, it's like, what is this, you know? Because if you've never fully allowed yourself to be, like you said, take off the scarf.
Yeah.
If you've never experienced it, it feels so intensely vulnerable that it's like, it's almost too shocking. You're like, don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, this is like what we want to look at. Mm. You know, this is the part we want to look at and remind you that that isn't you. Like, that's you.
Mm.
You know, these things, these external things that define you, that you've defined yourself as, aren't you. Yeah, man. And I think, you know, with the Yes Fam, when I look at the way people interact with each other, it's so different. Like very rarely with the Yes Fam do I see like mean, like putting down.
Mm.
It's oftentimes like
lifting up,
you know, like lifting each other up, supporting each other's dreams. And I think honestly, out of all the things, I think that's what makes it such a, you know, a life-changing community.
I totally agree. I double down on that. Like, people lifting each other, being able to open a door for each other. And then the person always has to do the yes by himself, like, or herself, to step through the door, but to be door openers, to be scarf throwers, to be like the ones who give us the push when we don't see that we can do it ourselves. I think that's beautiful. And I think that's also the most discomfort you can search, in my opinion, like to go deeper by yourself. I often describe that the longest half meter in the world, it starts from your head and it ends down in the belly. That's the longest half meter, because it's a hell of a long journey. It can be to go from your head down to your heart, down to your belly.
To feel it?
To feel it, to experience it. It's so easy to just push it away.
Mm.
And for me, that's been my biggest discomfort. I don't know how, if you feel the same, like of
100%, dude.
Of going down there when you just want to stare away, look away, but actually, okay. And I think the basic level are often what I feel is that to receive a compliment, when someone give you a gift, if you can actually take it or if it bounces away directly, that's often what I look at if I meet people and if I give someone a compliment, can they take it or are they sending it away?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I need to be aware of myself as well, of taking compliments, or if someone is holding this space for me, do I feel that I take up too much time, or do I allow myself, like, okay, now it's not on time, damn, that's scary. Or if I'm giving the space for someone else to help that person, no, it's your space now, I'm here only to give, only to give, and then help someone else to hold the space to receive it. I see it sometimes, what you call it, like when you go and swim in the ocean, when you have a ball and a swimming ball, a bath ball.
A bath ball?
A bath ball. A ball you try to push down on the water and it only wants
to come up.
It
keeps coming up, yeah.
Like that's what I see as well with emotion and the seeking discomfort. You try to like, you feel something and And the only way to do it is actually to face it and then to let it go. And then it pops up.
Yeah.
But it is scary to
Feel into it.
To feel into it.
Dude, even before this podcast, I spent about an hour and a half on my bed with piano music.
Oh.
Just feeling into my chest and my belly. I do it every week, maybe once or twice a week. I'll do that.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Just feeling into this part of yourself, which communicates everything else. We spend so much time up here and just we're so affected by this, but we ignore it. So then if you ignore it long enough, it just fucking screams. And then you get anxiety and depression, all this stuff. And it's all just, I mean, it's different places for different people, but for me at least. Yeah, same. Okay. Right here.
Cut. Same here. How often do you do that? Like when needed or when?
Usually before I'm like about to have to do something like this. Like if I'm, you know, having to show myself in a bigger way, I need to, it just allows me to release a lot of the stuff that would get in the way.
Mm.
Or if I'm feeling like, I don't know, sometimes like claustrophobic in my own body.
Yeah.
It helps to just release, you know, this sense of like tightness. Mm. But honestly, I mean, this is one of the things I was going to kind of go into with you, but like, I mean, you literally just went from 14 day adventure as at the time of filming this, a 14 day adventure with Reg.
Mm-hmm.
Going from London to Morocco,
for
the taxi cab episode.
Mm-hmm.
You just got back from Lebanon, where you did Abandon in Lebanon for a day.
Yeah, immersed into the culture. Yeah, one night that we.
Yeah, and then yes, 2 days ago was it 2 days ago or yesterday? 2 days ago, we did the meetup with the Yes Fam here in Paris, but also Seekers Day photo shoot the whole day.
Yeah,
and I remember looking at you guys because I mean, Des and I have been going on this podcast for the past month and it's been a lot, you know, it's been tiring. But when I look at the amount of movement and travel and remember what that was like for me and how difficult it is to process, you know, like it's just when it doesn't stop, like these moments of being able to lay down and just breathe for a second. And we were supposed to do this podcast yesterday and you're like, yo dude, I need to have a fucking break. Can I get a second to breathe?
Yes.
Please. And I love that you asked for it.
Yeah. Thanks that you listen.
So do you find, I mean, now we can go into this a little bit, like being a member of Yes Theory officially. Has that been like have you still found the time to do that where you're like checking in with yourself and making sure you're good so that you can hold space for other people?
More than ever, I would say.
Mm.
And I've really been practicing it and I'm still learning. But it's been like my savior to show up with great energy to be present. I recognize myself as well as you said that you needed to lay down for an hour before doing something like this. I always ask myself as well, like, what do I need to show up myself in the best possible way?
Mm.
And I do some certain things to try to be in the best state possible. Breathing is one of them. It's said that we breathe 20,000 breaths each day. I haven't counted, but it sounds good.
Wonder who did. Somebody did.
Somebody did.
Yeah.
And I believe that person.
Yeah.
So something breathing is like used one of the most important things to go to, like check my breathing. Am I breathing down to the belly? And then I learn from other wise people to put a hand on my belly. And I check that now and then. Like,
is that a thing, really? To put it on?
Yeah, to, helps. Put it, to have the hand on the belly. And then... and then to see, am I breathing down in the belly or am I breathing from my throat? And when I know that I'm breathing up here, I need to take it down to my belly when I'm breathing from my throat.
Mm.
So that's one thing. And then also to, one thing is like a cortisol map. I sound like a science professor here now.
Cortisol map?
Speaking about 20,000 breaths each day, speaking about the cortisol map. Yeah. But like cortisol is released when we are stressed. And it's apparently not so good to have too much cortisol running around in the body. So I often ask myself as well, like, okay, what's stressing me right now? And then just try to find an answer in that.
Mm.
And the easy way and the most common way and the way I sometimes do is just to escape it. Just run into my Instagram, run somewhere else, run into a conversation, occupy myself with my own thoughts. But when I'm succeeding is when I actually ask myself those questions and then like, okay, something that's knocking for my attention. I recently heard that someone said that the word pain stands for pay a attention inside now. So pain. So when I feel some kind of pain, I tell myself, okay, I need to pay attention inside now. What is feeling in my body? What mm-hmm. doesn't want to come out?
Mm-hmm.
So that I try to seek. Why I say try is because, as I said before, I don't always succeed. But I know how good I feel when I face it and when I meet it and when mm-hmm. I release it. Mm-hmm. Just with that ball pushed down when I mm-hmm. push it up. So that are two things I try to do.
Nice, dude.
Exercise, eat good food, spend time, hopefully with Matt and Des, who is in the room here as well.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Other beautiful shining people who can reflect our lights together. So I try to be with good people, and then I have to try to have me time,
mm-hmm.
spend some time with myself, and journal, and just so.
Go on dates. Gotta do dates.
Date myself and date.
That too.
And date, go on dates. So yeah.
Damn.
But it can be a lot, yeah. And yeah. Most of the times I've been feeling good, and then sometimes like, yeah, Thomas Amar has been seeing me like, damn. I told him like, I just need a half a day just to be with myself.
Mm.
It happened one time on the cab episode when we reached Lisbon. We had been going for like 12 days in a row. And I just told myself, wow, I just need to relax. Mm. I just got the trophy for Reg. We give King Reg. We're trying to find somewhere who can, how we say, engrave it, like make it King Reg. And this is the things people don't always see in the video, right? But it's me running around in Lisbon like, excuse me, can we make this trophy?
Very specific request. Yeah. It is the little things. Even seeing the episode go up, I was like, wow. You know, you watch a Yes Theory episode and you're like, this is the most fucking perfect, insane thing. And then the behind the scenes, exactly. You're just like scrambling. It's hot. You're like, the car's not turning on. Just like, fuck, you know? And I think to have someone, I mean, honestly, the way I see it is like me stepping away from the videos. You know, Tommy came in. It was like a really perfect transition of Tommy coming in and being in more videos as soon as I stepped out. And then you coming in, you know, it felt like complete. It felt like this wholeness that I think had been missing for some time. And I think that's particularly why I empathize with you so much, because, you know, even like being with Thomas and Amar for an extended period of time, like they're very specific personalities, you know, that require adjusting to, you know. And I mean, just like we have our own quirks, they do too. And I know so much what it's like to be in that environment with them too. And so sometimes when I watch the videos or think about you in the situation, I just like have an enormous amount of understanding of the situation, or at least I feel like I do. But I'd love to know, like, for you, cause I still remember watching the video of them on stage, surprising you, telling you that you were going to be the new Yes Theory host, which, by the way, like many people had been considered for like years to take up that position. And I don't know if there was like an exact selection process, but even I had offered people, you know, I'd suggested people, being like, I think this person would be good, that person. They're like, not yet. So to finally see them commit to you, I was like, damn, that's a lot of belief in a person. So I'd love to know for you, because you know, you started wanting to be, I mean, being a professional dreamer and you had this life of, you know, you had great speaking gigs, you were doing these summer camps, like you were getting more and more work. So what ultimately made you decide to do this like full time, you know, instead, and just kind of like leave this life that you'd created for yourself to be a part of Yes Theory?
I wrote a letter to my 8-year-old self and 80-year-old self.
80 or 8?
8 and 80. So two letters. When we finished the Iceman tour, after we've been featuring the film in 8 different cities. And when the tour ended in Toronto, Canada, I booked a flight to myself to Morocco. I just went by intuition, like, never been to Morocco, let's go to Morocco. Let's sit there, don't speak to anyone. Literally didn't speak to anyone for 4 days. I wrote a letter to myself and I promised some promises for my 8-year-old self. I had a picture in front of me as well. I have him actually.
Of your 8-year-old self?
Yeah, it's very close, accessible.
Oh my God, dude.
Here we have him.
Oh my
Stefan.
God. Look at this cutie. Wow. Wow.
So, yeah. So I...
Even the little cute outfit. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it, bro.
A freaking munchkin.
Thank you. So here's another good feature, by the way. I swim.
Say to inspire people, don't show them your superpowers. Show them theirs.
That's what you did when we were in Texas. Mm. You showed me your superpowers, bro.
Thanks, man. And you do it for everybody else.
Thanks, bro. Thank you, bro. Mm-hmm. So after the tour, I went to Toronto. I wrote this letter to myself.
To Morocco.
Thank you. After Toronto, mm-hmm. I went to Morocco and I didn't speak to anyone for 4 days. Mm. I went into like this resort and it was so many people there and I literally didn't speak to anyone. I was used by myself.
Nice.
And I used to dig deep inside of me and I was asking myself questions. And then during that time, I had great conversations with like, yeah, both Thomas and Amar as well. And everything just unfolded the following days ahead. And we just went for it. So some parts of me used to want to say that life guided because, yeah, it was like a door almost opening up, like in different ways, because it was perfect timing in my end for a new chapter, a new adventure. The same mission, like I had this mission since, I've been grateful to have this mission since I was like pretty much 20 years old, that I want to kill loneliness, create community. I want to reduce the sense of feeling excluded. I want to increase the sense of belonging for people. And I've been doing it in public speaking and with summer programs, but like to be able to do it through YouTube videos, through the lens of a video and do it together with like Amar and Thomas, who I like get so extremely inspired by and just on a daily basis, be shoulder to shoulder and learn mm-hmm. and to be like, you know, just take in as much as possible. And then also add my gifts to that and see what we together can do. Like, and then add the Yes Fam community to that as well. And then we're like, okay, now we're speaking about like an organism here that actually can do the better good. Like we have on a daily basis, people working to spread the message of seeking discomfort, lower fear, saying yes. Like the team of Yes Theory, which is like on, I think, 3 or 4 different continents. Mm-hmm. Then we have the Yes Fam around the world. And then we have like going on adventures, trying to seek these stories to tell the world. So it's like, we're on a mission and that's mm-hmm. what I'm connected to. And that's what I'm gaining my energy as well. I can feel it when I speak now as well. Like when the tiredness hit and I truly believe in resting, but it's like, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about the mission and it can sound maybe profound or big. I don't know, but that's what I connected to. Mm-hmm. Like, why do I do what I do? I've been telling Amar a couple of times. I don't know if this will sound wrong, but I'm telling him this will probably sound wrong.
Go for it.
But I'm telling Amar like, I'm not here to have fun. And that is not true. I love to have fun. Fun is one of my biggest values in my compass as well, which I live by, to have fun, to have joy, to be with people who have joy. But what I mean with that is that it's not in the bottom line. It's just not to have fun and make videos. It's so much deeper than that. It's to meet and reach people on a deeper level so we together can elevate the human experience for other people mm-hmm. and actually make an impact. Mm-hmm. For those who can't and for those who don't have the voice, we need to be the voice together and open that door for other people, because it's so many people who are locked inside of their apartments, in their city, in their environment. And it always doesn't need so much for that person to spark an energy. Mm. Of course, when someone is feeling really bad, I always encourage people, you know, to search professional help, psychologists, doctors, etc. I'm not sitting here and want to present easy solutions. I'm speaking out of a place of when I met many high school students who not been feeling so good, and it just broke my heart so many times. Mm. And I'm thinking about those people when I do what I do.
Damn.
Yeah.
And when you, I think one of the differences from what you were doing before to what you're doing now is you're reaching more people, yeah. but you're also not seeing as many people. Like there's a difference between working with 1,000 kids in person
yeah.
and seeing the transformation, you know, like getting, being able to see them and like listen mm-hmm. to them and hear them versus, you know, you put out a video and you get comments, mm-hmm. you get likes, mm-hmm. you get a lot of engagement online, but there isn't that almost like more consistent physical interaction. Mm. Like, has that been an adjustment for you in terms of the mission that you shared?
It has, and you described it very well. The mission is very similar, And it's in a different way. Like, I try to not look at the comments too much. I go in sometimes and I'm like, wow, it's often so much positivity and aloneness and you can see it, but it's not, it's when we do meetups, right? As we did 2 days ago, when you can hear the stories. I just heard the story of this Yes Fam member who I met at the Iceman premiere in Paris. And she stood up in front of everyone and she said, like, I have this big dream to show myself in the world that I can actually do the 7 summits. And now when I met her two days ago, she said, Stefan, I done my first summit.
Damn.
I did it. I went to Kilimanjaro, walked all the way up. And I was like, wow, so proud of you. You did it, girl.
Hell
so
yeah.
shout out.
Yeah.
And that's one story, right? Of someone wanting to mm-hmm. destroy their own limiting beliefs and show that they actually can do it for themselves and for the world. For another one, it's maybe the mental illness of being able to get friends. For another one, it's maybe to pursue a career as an entrepreneur. Whatever the obstacle is, only you can find it yourself, right? And I don't think any obstacle is better or worse than it's than the other. It's just that everyone has their own battle, mm-hmm. right? For some, it's to leave the freaking bed, to leave the apartment, and for some, it's to build the biggest company they ever dreamt of. And I respect both of them as much. So whatever is calling people, but when it comes to people's like mental health and that sense of loneliness, that's often where it hits me most, that I want to include and I want people to, how we say,
mm-hmm.
yeah, be there for each other so we can enable our whatever dreams later on.
Damn, dude. God, you're so perfect for this role. It's absolutely outrageous. I mean, literally, I don't think I could have crafted a more perfect man for you as this member of Yes Theory.
Thank you, bro. I don't know what to say then. Thank you. And I just try to bring the message. I just like thank everyone who put in energy and love into the Yes universe 8 years back and ongoing, because it is a mission that is changing the world and will be continue changing the world. You did it for many years. People have been joining the mission in different ways. And I'm just super grateful to like be part of it and we spread it.
I mean, dude, even the day... thank you for saying that. Even the day that it became official that you were going to join, I remember you sent me that message and you were like, dude, thank you so much for building it, you know, for starting it. Like, couldn't be here without all this stuff. And it's like, damn.
I felt so much gratitude for you, bro.
But I felt it for you too. I was like, wow, this is just like, it almost feels like a passing on of the torch. I was like, go get him, dude.
Yeah.
Go freaking get him.
You said something like that as well, I think, in a voice memo. Yeah.
I was like, you freaking got this.
You go, baby.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's amazing.
You want to talk about this
skydiving? Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, I feel like this was like the ultimate initiation for you, because this is like, I mean, from what I saw, especially, it's like truly your biggest fear is heights.
Yes.
And the boys, of course, knew this, and decided to give you the gift of the highest skydive in the whole world, literally above, I don't know, I think the Alps, was that the Alps?
Mont Blanc.
Yeah.
6,000 meters, 20,000 feet.
Yeah. And you had no idea, they surprised you.
Yep.
It's honestly, I mean, you're always very inspirational, you know, positive and everything, but it was the first time I saw you like very shaken by something. Like you almost like couldn't speak.
Couldn't, barely.
So I'd love to hear, just that day, like that experience.
Mm.
What was that like?
The day started with me believing I was going to meet Nicolas Cage and surprise Tommy Dyer.
Dude, yes.
But little did I know. And to go to the moment where like, I said like, surprise Tommy. And then Tommy pulls up a universe card and Amar presents to me that you're going to be the highest man in Europe this day. And my brain was like, okay, it's process time. It tried to process like what I used to be challenged within. And very fast, my spirit was like screaming, yes, let's do it. Mm. But my body and my brain was just a big, big battle of like, don't do this.
Mm.
So it was, it was a split personality for like 2 hours until I was in that helicopter. But I really needed to face my own fear, which I've never done in that way ever before. And I have been saying like that fear stands for face everything and rise. Like fear, I like these acronyms of different words. I like pretty many of them.
Yeah.
And team, do you remember what team stands for from Texas?
Together, everyone, You don't know it? Everyone achieves more.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. I've been a quote nerd since I was like 20 years old.
A
quote nerd. I've been collecting
Me too,
quotes.
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's so nice, right? Just to have those quotes in back of your mind.
Yeah.
We might be miles apart, but always close at heart.
Keep going. What else you got?
Yeah, whatever. What area do we want to? can be any. Often.
My favorite is the one when you're about to jump out the helicopter.
Yeah.
Oh, what was the quote?
Yeah, when a head full of fears has no space for dreams.
Mm.
Just before I jumped, I was like,
"Yeah, dude,
something needed to come out of that moment."
Did you know you were gonna say it?
When I was on the way up in the helicopter, I was like telling myself, like, a head full of fears has no space for dreams. So I was just telling myself, repeating that. I closed my eyes. I was breathing. And then when the doors opened, I was like, I barely remember I said it when like looking back to it now. But in the video, you can see like you say it and then like 1 second later, he pushes me out. Let's go. Well, technically, I actually jumped, so I needed to be the one who first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the instruction as well. Like, land over, then just jump. So I was like.
So on the way up, you felt. Because I remember you said you. Like, what was it? Like, you. As soon as the helicopter started going up, you were like.
As soon as the helicopter started going up, I went into full surrender, full trust. My favorite word in Swedish is tillit. It is trust, but in Swedish, and it's spelled the same way backward and forward. So that's how much you can trust tillit, I tend to say. So tillit is like, okay, tillit, Stefan, you have to trust this now. And when I'm in full tillit, when I'm in full trust, then I can't be scared because I'm in the present moment. The future doesn't exist. The past doesn't exist. It's only here and now. And then worries disappears. For me, it does. Anxiety and worry disappears. Anxiety and worry creates when I'm in the future and I'm in the past. And when I'm in the present, I can feel like a free bird just flying. I'm in that present state of like flow. And I was just in a really great state of like, just, okay, let's do this now. Because as soon as this helicopter started, I knew I was not going down. So.
I mean, that's impressive, dude. I feel like that's very rare. That takes practice, that amount of trust.
Yeah, it does, I believe. But I have been practicing it without. Now the Swedish part comes of me of not how, you know, say, trying to embrace myself too much. But in that moment, yes, it's some area I suck within. But the moment of having trust, it's been my light in darkness to trust that. It's been my light when I was younger, trusting a future that doesn't exist yet, to trust that, to just live and see that something better will come. I just need to keep on moving. I need to keep on going. That's been things I've been telling myself. And in that moment as well, I just needed to trust the moment and the transformation afterwards. And like, I'm forever grateful that
you felt it as soon as you landed.
As soon as I was in the air.
Really? Yeah. Once you were falling.
As soon as I was flying.
Flying, sorry. Big difference. It's true.
No, as soon as I was falling, flying, I was like feeling, wow, I'm here.
Damn.
And it just felt great.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
I am a little curious. I don't want to take too long on this, but, and we might not include it, but just based off like ending it on the right note, the family you come from, are you open to talking a little bit about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In some way.
Okay. Because we don't have to say like the specific people or whatever, but you know, there's like a good amount of alcoholism in your family. And I think, I mean, you know, there's been some in mine as well. And so there oftentimes with people who interact with adults, you know, who are alcoholics, there's a sense of like intense need to control. So when you say the surrender and the trust thing, I think that's why I'm like, wow, how does he do it? Because that's been my biggest struggle is that letting go. The full trust, the full faith. I even had a friend of mine who's this like incredible spiritual, like shaman woman. And she was just sitting with me one day and she just kind of looked at me and she was like, you know what your issue is? She's like, you just don't trust life. I was like, fuck, what am I supposed to do with that information?
Damn.
You know? And I, I think it does in a lot of ways come from this like hypervigilantness that I've inherited and had to live in mm-hmm. for a long time. And it wasn't even like the people most immediate to me. It was like, you know, other people in other parts of my family and that I've interacted with. So to hear you have so much faith in life, mm-hmm. despite coming from that kind of a background, mm-hmm. it's like, I guess I'm like, how, you know, like, how did you manage, you know, asking selfishly over here.
Yeah, great question, bro. Of course, we can't cover all the topics in a conversation in a moment like this. But I like to think about the iceberg sometimes. When you look at someone, you can only see the top of the iceberg, right? You can't see what's below. You don't know what people have for kind of fears or for traumas or history or background, whatever, until we start to ask and dig deeper as we are doing and we can do with each other, but mm-hmm. we literally don't know. And yes, under my iceberg, there are like alcoholic in my family tree, and it's just been extremely hurtful. It's been the biggest pain in my life. And before I could not even mention it without crying my eyes out. I don't say that, how we say, it's part of me, how we say, by learning and going deeper into pain and setting myself free, because I was like a prisoner.
A prisoner of it.
When it comes to the sickness of alcoholic, because it's a relationship sickness, they call it that, because it affects like family members. Many addiction sicknesses are that, because it affects the relationships around. So, yeah, you can probably sense it on me now when I'm talking about it. Like, it's hard to know what door to, how to say, where to continue. But what I want to say is that I go back to what we spoke about earlier as well. Like, the biggest pain became the biggest gift. I can connect so much deeper with people who have addiction in the family. And I've been meeting a lot of high school students who I could connect deeper with, thanks to like the story I have and the story they have. And also like been practicing a lot when it comes to shame. And a quote I love is that shame disappears when it's told in a safe place. Then it can be allowed to disappear. And I've been doing that, speaking about the shame of the alcoholic in my family. Even now when I speak about it, it's like, it's not a fun thing. It's not a fun thing to bring up, but I know that me being able to put words to it and you being able to put words to it, it can put words to someone else in their life and their story. That's the only reason that I'm putting light to it now, because I know that I can find joy, love, everything of the good parts in life and still have that pain.
Yeah,
it's like yin and yang. We met this Shaolin master in an episode we recently did, and he said it's yin and yang. It's not yin or yang. It's not one or the either. It's both. Both needs to coexist. Both the happiness and the sadness. Both the love and like all of the colors. And I think sometimes we're only looking for the good parts in life. But what is the good part then? I rather like to think of it, what is constructive and what is destructive. Yes, that was a destructive part of a family tree, which needed to be healed and needed to be like, yeah, needed to face that to be able to rise. And I needed to do the hard way. Like, I'm speaking of friction about it now, but I needed to go down in the bad alley and really feel that pain and sit in a circle with a lot of people and cry together, heal together, come out stronger than ever. And I really feel I became like a phoenix bird from the ashes, because I was so, it was so hard, but out of it, it became so much light and so much flow. And I know I would not sit here and do all the stuff I did if I didn't go through the pain, if I didn't pay attention inside now, faced it, let it free, and then I could fly. So it's just like an encouragement or an invitation to other people as well that are feeling something that they need to face. Please, I'm holding your hand digitally, virtually. And find that door that you need to enter. Someone maybe need to help you open the door, but find that door, because on the other side, it's so much beauty, and it is seeking discomfort to face something that's scary. It is, but we're here with you. Fly, my dear eagles, fly.
That's a perfect place to end it, dude. Damn stuff.
Yeah, bro. Because if you want to fly like an eagle, you can't be surrounded by turkeys. Yeah, bro. We love you, man.
You're the best, bro.